Who needs an alarm in the morning when McDonald's has sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles and a breakfast cutoff? Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
Welcome to another episode of Pop Law Podcast. I'm your host, Desiree, and I'm still not your attorney.
Before we jump into this episode, let me tell you about an upcoming continuing legal education course. On October 15, 2021, the Mondo NYC Music Festival and Conference will host an all-day virtual CLE featuring top music lawyers and thought leaders in the industry. Participants will receive up to 7 CLE credits in New York and California. Speakers include the New Recording Academy co-presidents Felicia Butterfield Jones and Panos Panay, Jane Ginsburg, professor of law at Columbia University, and more. Topics will include NFTs, catalog shopping, and digital streaming. Registration includes admission to the entire Mondo NYC event October 12th through 15th. More information can be found in the description box of this episode.
We are back with the interview series, and we have another special guest for you. Today, I am speaking with attorney Jaye Person Lynn, Esquire, an abolitionist, was born and raised in Los Angeles, California. Though attorney Person Lynn has lots of family on the East Coast, mainly Virginia, his 95-year-old grandmother, who was born in Los Angeles, establishes him as a true LA native. He has dedicated his life and law practice to justice, love, and unity for his people. A graduate of Hampton University and Howard University School of Law, attorney Person Lynn mainly practices criminal defense and civil rights. He has been running Person Lynn Law Firm since October 2013 and has represented various high-profile and low-profile clients in matters from driving on a suspended license to murder. Having experienced the worst of the criminal justice system personally, attorney Person Lynn vigorously represents his clients, understanding the smallest case is the biggest case to each client. As an abolitionist, he's a staunch advocate for the Second Amendment and teaches and encourages all Black people to lawfully possess firearms. In his spare time, attorney Person Lynn recruits for HBCUs, travels, and organizes events for his community and engage with others to build stronger ties. Attorney Person Lynn is a member of We Not For Sale podcast and a moderator on Clubhouse of the Sleepless NLA Club. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Jaye Person Lynn.
Hey, pum pum pum.
I'm so excited to have you. And I know everyone must have heard you went to Hampton University. Yes. And that is where we know each other because we are graduates of the real HU, although you went to both.
I did. And, you know, I tell people they're both the real one. It just comes down to who's the better one. If we're talking undergrad, then we're talking the Royal Blue HU.
Yes. Amen to that. You know, I was looking forward to going to homecoming last year because it would have been my 10-year anniversary, and then thinking about going this year. But, you know, COVID is still around and prevalent.
Yeah, well, my ticket is booked, so is my Airbnb and my rental. And I somehow found an Airbnb in Hampton with a heated indoor pool. So
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
So what you saying? I need to go to homecoming.
pull up, bring the bathing suit. The Sunday chill down, cool down is gonna be poolside this year. We're gonna have a good time.
Yeah, we go have a good time. I think it's still on my to-do list.
I hope so.
I'm excited to have you, and I really wanted to talk about, just black people and the hip hop police. I'm just seeing too many cases of black men, and this is not excluding black women, but particularly black rappers getting caught up in what we like to call the hip hop police and going to jail. It just seems like it's so prevalent now, and really because of social media. I
Yes.
want to talk a little bit about that, but before we dive in, I love that you encourage black people to lawfully carry firearms.
Oh, most definitely. It's the thing when I say that, and this is, not trying to get into politics, but why I cannot vote. I will vote for a Democrat locally, but nationally and statewide, I cannot vote for Democrats, because when I bring that up to people, and here in the South, Los Southern California community, I'm tapped in with most of the black politicians. And so when I bring that up, they're like, we need less guns on the street. But I remind them, for those that were born here and wherever they lived, prior to the 60s, almost every black home had a firearm in it. Almost, even people forget Dr. King gave his firearm up when he instituted nonviolence as a way of life for himself, but he still never told the deacons of defense to go home. And he had a fight. He grew up with firearms. That's just what they did in the South. But I also remind them that that's when crime was at its lowest in our community. People had firearms in the homes. They kept the doors unlocked. They kept the cars unlocked. We gave up the firearms. We run into the narrative that it's more harmful for us to have them. And then we don't talk to the youth about them. So who does? The janky big homie in the hood that's there with ill intentions. They put a gun in their hand. They're enamored by it. Especially young men. They want to be able to protect their families, protect themselves, and very little makes you feel as powerful as having a firearm. But when you don't have that training and that knowledge on the power of that firearm, you can and often do things that are quite foolish, quite reckless, and it ends up with the gun violence problem that we have in our community, which, although I'm a staunch advocate, I recognize. I've been to those funerals. I've had those bullets whizzing by my head. But I also know that as a law-abiding citizen, it's unfair and truly unconstitutional to make me a criminal just for wanting to protect myself, when as a black man, I'm the highest per capita victim of gun violence. But I'm also a criminal if I just have my firearm. And so for our politicians to say they want to protect us, but you say we need reform, the police have racist practices. But by supporting these restrictive firearm laws, you're saying that we want you to only look to these people that we know have racist practices and oppressive practices to protect you. And that just doesn't make sense. And I can't support any politician that supports that narrative.
Yeah, I definitely think that's very valid. We do as black people need to have guns. I personally don't. I'm going to get one
You
now that
should. We'll go to
are.
Redstone Firearms right in Burbank, black owned, and
Okay.
they won't make you feel bad for not knowing anything about guns. Get you the right beginner gun and have you up and running in no time.
Good. I'm scared. I went to the gun range one time and I was shooting with my eyes closed. So I'm like, this is not the way to do it. I need to practice. I need to have a legal gun. And now that I'm back in California, I can make that happen. So I'm looking forward to that. But since we're on the topic of guns, one thing that really stood out to me and why I wanted to have this conversation is the recent Pusheysti incident. He got caught for gun and weapon and a gun charge and stealing money in a car, and he got caught because of his post on Instagram. Allegedly, there was a robbery and the police linked it to him because of his Instagram post. They matched the gun, they matched the bags and the car that was in the surveillance video from the robbery. And so people need to pay attention to what they post on social media, because the police are watching all of us, particularly higher profile people with money.
Yes. And looking at the federal robbery case, right? That's unique in and of itself. Yeah. If it's not a bank, I'm not sure if it was a bank.
I believe it was a person.
Yeah. So usually that's a state crime. Usually that's local law enforcement. So the feds must have been on him for something else and said, we can take him down for this.
Who needs an alarm in the morning when McDonald's has sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles and a breakfast cutoff? Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Yeah. But that's what I get from that. The whole posting on social media, I mean, they post illegal guns, they post them in ways that you can see the serial number, and then they run the police, who are now in the major metropolitan areas and even in some smaller jurisdictions, all have teams that sit there and look at social media. They look at lives, they follow the gangsters, they have dummy accounts. They look at the lives, or they get access through other people. You know, snitches aren't just people sitting there verbally telling. They're people giving law enforcement access to your page,
right,
whether it's blocked or not. And you make it real easy for law enforcement. And I think that's one of the downsides of trap music, is blurring the lines for the youth that don't fully understand, blurring the lines between real street stuff and entertainment. And we're always going to lose that battle one way or the another, whether we lose it. And I don't want to say like Nipsey was doing that, blurring those lines, because I don't think that was his message. He wasn't out there promoting a lifestyle just to, you know, say, look at me, I'm cool, I'm a gangster. He had a message, he was doing his thing, but he was, you know, keeping it right there in the streets. And so that's one way that it can cause harm. But the typical way, the main way that I've seen over and over again, and one of the biggest cases here in Southern California was with Drakeo the Ruler, just blurring those lines. And all throughout that trial, videos that they put out, you know, it was a song like Chunky Monkey or something. I had no idea what the song was about. I didn't really listen, but hearing the officer testify, they're like saying, yeah, this is talking about a big gun and that we're going to kill you. And this lyric says that. That's commonplace. And people have to understand that. But it's like, I guess it's either they don't care or they have the it's not going to happen to me mentality.
Right.
When it's gonna happen to everybody that's really living that lifestyle. And so to any person, particularly young person that's watching this, who is following somebody that they see doing the most street stuff they see doing and is not getting in trouble in law enforcement, it's probably all fake. Because if you're really doing that and you're really showing what you're doing, you are going to get caught up by law enforcement.
Absolutely. So what I'm hearing you confirm is the hip hop police is real. There are teams and organizations that their specific job is to watch your social media account, to listen to your music and see what crimes you may or may not be committing.
Oh, man. And, you know, I have a case right now, not my client, but a co-defendant who, you know, they are in his they got in his Google account, you know, the cloud, for anybody that doesn't know, is a big ass computer. So whatever's in that computer is stored. And if the feds send a subpoena, at least now Google has a policy to let you know that a subpoena was served on them. And that was something they just started. And I found that out from a client that showed me the email. They will go into your cloud. And now we're talking about your text messages. We're talking about the notes that you write, right? This is a case where he was writing down lyrics as they were, but the cops are saying these lyrics are connected to this crime that we're prosecuting him for. So the notes in his own phone are being used against him to prosecute him.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. You never would think privacy. That. But
I guess no privacy when you need to make the case, right?
Yeah, there isn't any. Anything that you know, and I tell you, get you a bigger phone and hope if you're living that life, don't use the cloud.
Right. Just
flat out, don't use the cloud. And understand there's no such thing as erasing anything written on social media.
Right.
When I get the discovery, and it's from Facebook, Instagram, you have the column for messages that are still available and the column for messages that have been deleted. The only thing, like on Instagram, if somebody posts a picture and delete it, that won't come up. Mm-hmm. So like if you really have to put something in writing, then put it in a picture form, you know, screenshot it, post it, and delete it if that's how you need to do it. But that's what people, I guess, don't realize. They think if their page is private, it can't be touched. It's Instagram, mm-hmm. Google, Facebook. They're keeping all of this information.
Right.
If they delete it, it's gone. It's just not the case.
Mm-hmm. So where's the balance between lyrics that are false and lyrics that people are actually committing these crimes? I think sometimes, you know, listeners, they don't really know how to decipher what's entertainment and what if a rapper or someone is actually about that life. Does it even matter from a police standpoint?
Yeah, from a police standpoint, because you still have to prove your case. Now, what we're finding out is from the younger audience in particular, they don't care. Mm. They don't. It's a whole group of 16, 17-year-olds that don't care. Tekashi 6ix9ine took a stand in a federal trial against members of his gang. They like his music.
Right.
They were never going to live that lifestyle anyway. They just thought it sounded cool. And people have to understand that. And so, you know, where the line is, I mean, from a small child, I remember listening to like the NWA era music out here on the West Coast and thinking like, I had to be like 6, 7. But I remember having a thought. If they're committing crime, why are they talking about it on a record? And, you know, now NWA, they were just telling general stories. They weren't talking like how now people really go shoot at somebody and go to the studio that night and record about how they shot at somebody earlier today.
Right.
And, you know, that's just how it goes. Or if they did talk about something, it was what somebody else did and they left that person unnamed. Mm-hmm. But they'll be like, yeah, little shoddy is a shooter and he just shot him on 10th Ave on the 24th. Like, you know, I'm exaggerating, right. But
I think it's cool. And that's how it's kind of set up to be. I sell the music to make all the money, this gangster glitzy lifestyle that attracts, you know, listeners who care or not about the lifestyle you're living. But you get caught up and going to jail for it. I want to touch on the 6ix9ine thing a little bit. You know, this is when I stopped really commenting on social media because people were attacking me for 3 days. When I had commented, it may have been something on the Shade Room that I don't blame 6ix9ine for snitching on the people in his crew. And we grew up with different lifestyles than people may believe that we have because we are lawyers. But at the end of the day, my opinion on that was street code went out the window. When you pistol with me, you kidnapped me, you did some stuff to my family, stole my money and did all these personal things, then I don't owe you any loyalty at this point. Yeah, I did the crimes. I'm going to take, you know, part for what I did. But at this point, it's over for y'all.
Yeah.
They at me on social media. You don't know a lawyer. That's what lawyers expect you to say. Like,
and that's exactly the position he took. And, you know, as was stated in my bio, I am a moderator in the Sleepless in L.A. room. And we brought 6ix9ine to Clubhouse. WAC 100 is a member of the Sleepless in L.A. Club. And he brought 6ix9ine to Clubhouse for a very candid discussion. And that's, you know, I like to refer to him more as Danny, and because that's who I'd like to see him be, and that's who took the stand when he got sworn in to testify. It didn't swear him in as Tekashi 6ix9ine. You know, they tell people, all right, now spell your first and last name. It wasn't Tekashi 6ix9ine. It was Danny. That's who testified. And I think more people need to understand that and recognize that. Now, he's a very unique person because when it came down to it, WAC 100, his whole point in interviewing him and giving him that platform was to point out that this is a civilian. He did what civilians do. Mm-hmm. Civilians can't snitch. They can tell, but they're not snitching because they didn't agree to it. Now, that's what makes him a hybrid, right? Because he agreed to do the things that he agreed to do, but it wasn't like organic. Like, he didn't grow up with that gang and join that gang as a teenager. And as a young teenager and get put on and put in work and then work his way up. He got a little buzz rapping, and the gang, you know, they looked at it as a mutually beneficial relationship. And then he just got in too deep when he should have. So the gang's fault was giving this civilian credentials as if he was really in this military, like me going to the Marines. Just because, you know, I got into a couple fights and now the Marines give me a badge and a military ID. Like, I'm really in it. I ain't went to no boot camp.
Right.
I ain't went through none of that. But that's pretty much what happened in that scenario. So he views himself as real. But I think he, you know, from the conversation, as far as I took it, I think he recognizes why he's not a gangster, because the from like WAC 100's position was, yeah, I get it. But When you're a gangster to that level, then the police are a separate nation, right? And so you don't help that nation do anything, even against your enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's different in the streets of L.A. I can tell you, one, people snitch all the time.
All the time. Watch the first 48.
Yeah, for one. And for two, it's just like, you know, a lot of these people, they... The streets. So one thing I did agree with 6ix9ine, and not completely, but he was like, man, the street shit is dead. And as far as you know, cats are still in the streets, don't get me wrong, but as far as like that kingpin, that, you know, people all maintaining the code, that's what's dead. You know, you can't trust members of your gang. You can trust your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially. That's all you can trust, your clique. But you go do a mission with this dude from this other set of the same gang, you can't trust he won't turn on you. And you can't trust that the gang will turn on him if he turns on you. And that's just, you know, the way it goes. And, you know, historically, a lot of it started from what I recall and what I've been told and what I've seen. Like the Mexican gangsters, it was like, nah, you don't tell on Mexicans. But somebody else outside of us, you could tell on them, and they just used all the pieces, whereas the blacks were more like, nah, we're not going to do that. And so in a 6ix9ine situation, it's like, okay, well, this is what y'all did. Okay, I'm put together a team and get you touched, but I'm not going to testify against you.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, why people in the streets really don't rock with, and that's why WAC was getting that flack for even giving them a platform, because they like, you a real street dude, you done been to prison, you ain't never told on nobody, why would you even give him a platform? But once again, he was trying to expose that this is a civilian, and this is somebody that was supposed to do what he did, but as you explained, it was almost the exact words that 6ix9ine used. Y'all told me this code was loyalty, honor, and y'all were disloyal, you were dishonorable to me and my family, so you violated the code, I violate the code, which, you know, I understand.
Yeah.
But and, you know, to be honest, me personally, never claiming to be that street dude, I was in them but not of them,
right?
I'm like, damn, if you did me like that, I have no reason to be loyal to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm glad, you know, at least from this call, I hear that I'm not alone. Some people agree with me, but, you know, the majority of people who were talking mess, they don't know anything about the street or about the law. So, you know, I think that's a good parallel when we can talk about the intersection between entertainment and criminal justice law. And I'm sure in your practice, you're kind of, you know, touching on both of them at this point, since it seems like they're at least intertwined from a media perspective. And a lot of these charges that people are getting is racketeering. Can you talk about what racketeering is and why it's coming up so often?
It's basically, you know, like real organized plan. It's like, if, you know, it's a business that's illegal, basically, is the long and the short of it. And so you got people making money. They might have a gambling scheme. They might have a credit card scheme. It's just, you know, it's organized criminal activity geared around making money, you know, and that's what it boils down to. It's, you know, typically large scale, and, you know, it might be people connected all the way through. Those RICO charges, like when they went and picked up everybody from BMF, they made arrests all throughout the country. Connected to the scheme all throughout the country. And so that's the tough part, because in those, you have, you know, there were the artists and people that ran with BMF or partied with BMF, right? But they seemed to be so tight, like they knew, we're not gonna give a entertain. If somebody is really in it, then we don't want you in the spotlight.
Right.
You know, at least not globally, because them dudes apparently, you know, spotlight was on them wherever they went. But at the same time, if you weren't heavy in the culture, like I didn't really hear about BMF until Jeezy and them started talking about them on records. But you see, Jeezy and them didn't get caught up in any of that, because they did what they did, but they, you know, apparently didn't do it with them, at least not at the time that the investigation started. And so that's the important thing for people to understand, is that these large scale operations, you know, you might have a very small role in it, but when they come, they come for you as well.
Yeah, everybody. And I like that you talked about keeping a low profile, that people did, you know, if they were actually the ones committing the crime. And then just to tie this a little bit more to entertainment, from at least a contract perspective, I think something for rappers or anybody who's doing anything dealing with contracts or brands. And I don't know, I just thought about the baby, although he isn't having any criminal problems at this point, all the backlash that he got from the comments that he made that rubbed some feathers wrong, a contractual obligation that a lot of brands put in is a morals clause. And so a morals clause is essentially the brand can terminate the agreement if you do something that paints them in a negative light or your reputation harms them in any way. So they have the ability to cut ties with you. And I think that's what happened to the baby in a lot of the cases with the festivals dropping him. But for rappers, and particularly with, you know, for the purpose of what we're talking about, these songs and them talking about drugs and guns and killing people, you know, that's who they are. That's what they talk about. Well, may not be who they are, but what they talk about for the appeal. And that's why they're on these bills. So I would just suggest limiting those, you know, morals clause to only being convicted of new crimes. So it doesn't matter if you are arrested or, you know, you make news that might embarrass the brand. They knew who you were when they signed you up for it. So you are actually convicted of those crimes. And then sometimes, you know, people push for it to be felonies and not misdemeanors.
When something happens to your kitchen, you might say,
"This is ludicrous."
But that won't fix your home. That will only get you the rapper Ludacris.
Having trouble? Don't panic. Don't be alarmed. You need to file a claim? Holla at State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. You can file a claim on the app or call us.
Thanks, Mr. Chris.
No matter how ludicrous the situation, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
And so you can still get your money because they knew who they were when they came to you in the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. And with the baby, I'd be interested to see his contracts because
so
he may have still been able to keep whatever deposit they gave him.
Yeah.
Because what he said, I think it would be very difficult to stand up in court that would be something that would violate the morals clause. But outside of court, the court of public opinion is different. Right. And if I'm a festival and I know how much it costs to put on the Leimert Park Juneteenth Festival, so I can imagine how much it costs to put on a Coachella, a Day in Vegas type festival, where all the artists are paid. And, you know, in Leimert Park, we were, you know, people out there doing it for the love. So they're like, hey, if, you know, I already gave them 25,000 of the 50 I was going to give them, but if I don't cut them, I'm going to lose $1 million in these sponsorships. So go ahead, keep your 25,000. And maybe he gets the whole thing because maybe he would have booked something else had he not agreed to contract with you that day. But at the end of the day, it's still worth it to that festival in their eyes to cut ties completely, at least for now. You know, I'm not in the community that claims to be offended, but I do think that situation was more so about like white supremacy and buck breaking more than being offended, right? Because we have to remember the LGBTQ community is the only suffrage movement in American history with white men involved. And that's a unique dynamic, right?
You like, said you heard on here preaching to the people.
Yeah, yeah. You're still a white man at the end of the day. You still have these resources, you still have this power. And that's what it is. Like, oh, you don't want to say what we tell you to say. Well, let's show us what we can do to you. It's going to be tough. And although we do have to respect people, I just think that respect needs to go across the board. And I think people are going to have to understand that there's no history of like the Black community in any systematic way damaging or harming the LGBTQ community, certainly not the white LGBTQ community. And my experience, even with the Black LGBTQ community and the discussions I like to have is the racism within that community. This was, you know, maybe your first June here, you got the Pride Fest all June, and then the Black Pride is somewhere else. It's different. And the Pride doesn't just readily welcome the Black community. The white gay community isn't just readily welcoming of the Black community.
Oh, education over counseling and canceling. And so that's what we are trying to do here as well. And so, you know, with that, let's give, I guess, our listeners and who may be entertainers some quick little tips to how they can avoid the hip hop police.
Well, one, Dom Kennedy has a lyric, his song Respect My Mind, which is on the Judas and the Black Messiah soundtrack, that goes, I got the right to bear arms to protect what I own, especially when it's me and I got on all this gold. And you do have that right now in California. You need a concealed carry permit to carry. So you either want to have your security if you don't have one, because California, you might have one in Georgia, Florida, but California does not recognize that. You'll still get a criminal charge for having a loaded firearm. But the best you can do, they have these portable lock boxes. So the law says you can have the gun anywhere in the car as long as it's completely enclosed. Like you can't have the wire lock on your gun and have your gun exposed, but it has to be completely enclosed in one of these lock boxes, one of these safes, and the bullets cannot be attached to it in any way. Extra tint on the front windows. You know, you're just asking. You're driving around with probable cause or reasonable suspicion to stop you. Mm-hmm. No license plate on the front or the back. In California, you need a license plate on the front and the back. So once again, you drive around with it, probable cause to stop you.
Right.
The smell of marijuana in and of itself is not probable cause to stop, but there's still... Is marijuana is kind of like alcohol, like how you can't have an open container in the passenger compartment of the vehicle. Marijuana is like the same way. You know, if you have it in there, it should be sealed and unopened. And so, and driving without a license. It's like, yeah. I don't know why entertainers have the worst time just with going to the DMV and paying those tickets. You know, you got a whole... You go to the jeweler, give him $25,000, won't go to the DMV and get him $1,500 to clear up everything. And so now it's like, oh, well, since we can arrest you for driving on a suspended license, now we can search your car incident to arrest. Mm. Now we find this, now we find that. And then also, you know, just no drunk driving at all. You know, just
right.
Uber, wherever your car is, still cheaper for you to get your car out the impound for a night than it is to hire me to represent you, DUI case. So those are the kind of things that, I mean, there's
the judgments. Show up to court. A lot of
In the civil side, yeah. Yeah.
Civil side.
Mm. Yeah, word to the game. you know, we respond to those civil lawsuits.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal because that default judgment is real. You know, NDAs are big, but NDAs do not subvert consent. Like, woman sign an NDA, cool, she can't talk about the party unless you do something criminal to her, like rape her. And also, artists, remember, consent can be withdrawn at any time.
Yes.
And one pump past that stop is legally rape. Now, mm-hmm. there's obviously a defense to that in that scenario. You know, it's like, I didn't hear or think, you know, obviously we consensually had sex. We were doing it for 5 minutes. I didn't think it will stop, and anybody doing that is trying to set you up. But with T.I. and Tiny, there's a bunch of different examples. He, you know, like, that was a cold game. They when they caught the case for the lean and the pills in L.A., it's like they did everything they thought they could do. They hired a driver.
Yeah.
Now the driver make an illegal U-turn. Now you got these styrofoam cups. Now they looking in the car.
Yeah.
It's all of that. But you know, you just want to do the simple things, the license plates, the tent, the having a license, the seat belts.
Texting.
Yeah. No texting and driving.
Yeah. And then again, social media, pay attention to what you post because someone is watching, and be aware of the lyrics. You know, the police may not know what's for entertainment and what's not, but they are listening and watching either way, and will connect that to build the case.
And people like to use lingo to act like, no, they don't know what I'm saying. Yeah, they do.
They know.
Why? Because they're paying some dude right now to translate for them.
Absolutely.
And the last thing I just want to introduce is Perkins operations. Perkins operations, these are when people get arrested. The cops will either put you in a cell with your co-defendant in hopes that you say, hey, this is what we gonna tell them. Cells are all bugged. Anytime you're in custody, you have to assume that you're being recorded. And anybody talking to you, especially if you're a high profile person and they put you in a cell with somebody else, that person's a snitch. That person is being paid to put there. They're not a real inmate. They're being paid to talk to you to try and get you to share that information. Now, that happens to regular people, celebrities alike. But certainly understand that that happens. And when you are in custody, assume that everything is being recorded.
That is a great tidbit, because I don't think that's even something that I knew. You know, obviously they're always watching and listening, but set up to get more info. I mean, I've never been in jail. I don't plan to ever go. Can't laugh anymore. I'm snitching. But before we get out of here, I want to talk about something that's, you know, very close and personal to you, and something that I feel like no matter the education and stature that you have, being a Black person in America, being a Black man in America, you are not exempt to police brutality and mistreatment. And one thing that I've recently transitioned from saying is the criminal justice system. I don't call it that anymore. I call it the criminal legal system, because you can't get justice. There's laws that everyone is following. So I don't mind sharing, you know, briefly a little bit about your experience with being a attorney and in court.
Yeah. And you know, that situation is one that's probably, that's certainly going to stay with me for as long as I can, you know, remember it. But in that situation, I went to court not dressed in a suit. I had on some camouflage, like moccasin style shoes, closed toe, some red chino pants, and a multicolored shirt. It was white in the chest area, and then from the stomach down, it was multicolored dashiki print, like red, brown, red, green, yellow, and same on the back, mainly red with dashiki print, multicolored. Walked in, tried to speak to the clerk. A deputy told me I needed to go back there. I asked him why. He said, because you're not an attorney. I explained to him I was an attorney. He told me I needed to speak to the bailiff. I went to speak to the bailiff. She says, so you see that bar? Only attorneys can pass that bar. I'm now telling her, hey, I'm an attorney, reaching in my back pocket to get my bar card. And the first deputy that spoke to me, Deputy Barry, pushes me beyond the bar. At that point, I go to walk around him. He pushes me back again with his hand on my chest. I bring my hand up to his, and he moves his hand down. And in my view, he did it on his own. But let's say I removed his hand from my chest. At that point, I wasn't under arrest. I was an attorney. I had the license. You know, this goes back to whether you have authority or whether you have license or whatever, but my bar card gives me the license to be on that side of the bar. So I had license to be there. I knew they did not believe me. They testified as such. They just didn't believe me. They say based on the way I was acting, but I don't know how else an attorney should act when I've identified myself. I've identified my purpose for being here, and you don't ask me for any identification. Don't give me the opportunity before you put your hands on me. But that act, removing his hand from my chest, is what they say, and in my view, touching his hand, and he removed his own hand. But either way, that act, I was convicted of delaying or obstructing him under California Penal Code Section 148A1, which is basically contempt of cop. In that statute, it says when you don't have anything else to arrest them for, arrest them for this. Mm. And so how it delayed or obstructed him from doing his job, I still don't know. No one's been able to explain it to me. We are going through the appeal process, but that's not where the incident stopped. That happened within like the first 45 seconds of me walking into the courtroom. Then after that, after his hand leaves my chest, I have a back and forth with the bailiff, a black woman, where she's telling me I can't go over there. I'm telling her I'm an attorney. I'm an officer of the court. I'm here to speak to the clerk. I don't want to talk to you guys anymore. And the reason I said that is because you put your hands on me. I don't have anything else to say. You can't help me with the business that I'm trying to do. And so we have that back and forth. They say, well, you got to talk to me. And I say, well, tell the clerk I want to talk to her. They eventually had me go out to the vestibule, which is the area between the hallway and the courtroom. There's no cameras in there. The door was open, but the deputies closed the door. As I'm giving the case number to Deputy Sutton, who I'm standing directly in front of, about 6 feet in front of her, Deputy Barry's to her right and behind her, to her right, maybe 2 to 3 feet, and behind her, maybe a foot or so. And as I'm telling her, I look over to him and say, you fucked up. And I look at his name back, Deputy Barry. I thought it was Barbie. I looked over, it was Barry, B-A-R-I-E. You fucked up when you put your hands on me. And I promise you, I'm going to come after you with everything I have and everything I learned in law school. Mm-hmm. And that was what I said. It's recorded. You know, anybody can go hear it for themselves. And so he shoots me with a taser, claiming that I approached him and he thought I was going to hit him. Now, this dude in his report says I was flailing my arms. There's video of that part. I'm never flailing my arms. Says I put my hand in his face multiple times. Never put my hand in his face. But the way white supremacy works, you know, because I was convicted at a jury trial. The jury discounted all of that, his lies, even though they heard him testify. Yeah, I put in my report. He put his hand in my face. And you have the video. You see me never putting my hand in his face. I was flailing my arms. You see me never flail my arms. They saying I got aggressive. There was some audio. You hear my tone of voice. None of that mattered. But that's how white supremacy works. In their eyes, I'm less than. And one juror told me afterwards, he's like, man, if they did that to me, I would have done the same thing. And that's the definition of white supremacy. Like, I'm less than. I would have done it, but you nigga should have known not to touch that white man. I mean, you had a black woman cop saying, shouldn't have been arrested. I wouldn't have arrested him. He never presented a threat. The encounter was friendly until Deputy Berry pushed him. That's what she testified to. I'm testifying. I shouldn't have been arrested. I'm an attorney. I've studied this. I know the law. I know everything I did was within the law. This completely non-black juror, it was like four whites or three whites, three Latinos or three Asians.
Everybody loves McDonald's fries. So yes, you accused your mom of stealing some of your fries on the way home. But the bag did feel a little light.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Four Latinos, four whites, or however it was. There was no black people in the jury pool at all. But they all agreed that I obstructed or delayed him. And the DA argued that because he was a custody deputy, and he had inmates to watch over. He couldn't watch over his inmates while he was dealing with me. Now, the whole thing from the time he first spoke to me to the time he shot me with a taser was less than 2.5 minutes. Yeah, well, it was about 2.5 minutes. But somehow that delayed him so much. Now, there can be an instance like, and that act where his hand was left my chest, that was all of 3 seconds that his hand was on my chest the whole time. Now, a situation where I can be criminally liable for delaying or obstructing an officer for 3 seconds is I see somebody running from the police and that person runs through a doorway and I close the door to help that person get away. Now, it takes a cop 3 seconds to open the door. It's only 3 seconds, but he or she is in hot pursuit. I'm doing this to slow them down. I'm certainly doing that. But if somebody runs through the door, I don't notice a cop is coming. I close the door because I don't want nobody else running through. Even though it's the same act, I didn't do it to delay them. And just because it did delay them, that doesn't mean it. That means, you know, anybody that's when they hear a siren behind them and they can't get over right now so the cop can get past them now, they would be criminally liable, right? Or under that theory, because he testified, though his main duty was the custody's, his other duty was to maintain security of the court. And he did what he did to me based on his duty to maintain security of the court. Therefore, under that theory, if a cop is out doing DUI patrols, but he or she pulls you over for talking on your cell phone, now you're prohibiting them and delaying or obstructing them from doing their DUI patrol. So now you're guilty of PC 148A1. Under that philosophy, it just makes no sense. But the way white supremacy works, the judge should have never allowed this case to go to jury in the first place.
Right.
And certainly shouldn't have allowed that act to be an act that I could be convicted of. Mm-hmm. But when this white supremacy thing, it's in the Declaration of Independence. It says all men are created equal with unalienable rights amongst those life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. There's 5 men credited with writing that. 3 of the 5 at the time owned slaves, and Ben Franklin had previously owned slaves, but had given them up in like the 1750s. And this was written in 1776. So Right. That's them telling you, you are not a man.
Right.
You are less than. We do not regard you as this. Then the Constitution comes. And when they do mention us, it says 3/5 of the person. And all the people will say, hey, that was trying to stop the Southern plantations from, you know, having more votes. Well, at the end of the day, let's say they did, right? It would have been maybe harmful. But at the end of the day, if we were counted as full humans, right, maybe when things did change, we'd still be counted as full humans. But mm-hmm. we have the Declaration of Independence. We have the Constitution. And then if there was any misconception on what they meant, we have the Dred Scott v. Sanford case, where the Supreme yeah. Court ruled that a black man was so far inferior to a white man that a white man had no rights, that that a black man had no rights that a white man was bound to respect. And we were so far inferior that we can justly and lawfully be enslaved for our own benefit. That's right. And anybody that has any questions about this country's view, this is the highest court of the land, the greatest legal minds of the time. If anybody has any questions, please go read the Dred Scott decision, and you will see exactly what the intent of black people in this country was. And the 13th Amendment actually allows for slavery. Like if you're convicted of a crime, under federal law, you can be a slave if you were a descendant of the enslaved. And the 14th Amendment that says we're a citizen, I mean, the fact that you need a 14th Amendment to make me a citizen, one, it makes me no different for being born here than a Russian operative that comes over here to have a baby just to infiltrate. They have the same amount of rights. And two, it lets me know I'm in a subclass of people, because people voted and were citizens before the 14th Amendment.
Right.
So the fact I need one is proof that the foundation of this nation is built on white supremacy and black inferiority. And I thought, you know, being a taxpayer, being a homeowner, you know, a property owner, a business owner, a college graduate, not having any criminal record, that I would certainly qualify. I was a real American. You know, I got European, right, Native, and African blood. This is a mix that's only created here. But that situation really showed me exactly what my place and what my status is in this nation, and had me reevaluate those documents.
I knew some of the details of your case, but not everything. And, you know, I'm one, very shocked, unfortunately not surprised, but one, I'm apologetic that that happened to you and you had to experience that, just off the fact that they didn't want to believe that you're an attorney based off how you're dressed. And, you know, I'm not a litigator. I don't go to court all the time, rarely ever, but the times I have been to court, I have seen attorneys not dressed in suits, especially if they aren't litigating a case.
Yeah.
So I do not think that that should have any bearing on your credentials. And you taught me something, carry a bar guard. I don't probably need it in my profession. And well, we're in the same profession, but my practice, I don't even know where it is. So,
yeah. And that's the thing for me is, I want people, anybody that hears this is like, oh, you went to court with us. I did not have a case on calendar that day. And another important factor, I called the courtroom and said, hey, this is what I'm trying to do. This is the information I'm trying to receive. They said, get it from the clerk's office. So this courthouse is 70 miles from my home and office. So I'm not expecting to go in a courtroom at all. And when we don't go in courtrooms, we don't often dress in business professional attire.
Yeah.
And so that's what it was. And, you know, they tried to act like, I've never seen that from an attorney before. That's just a flat out lie.
Right.
People come in courts for various reasons. You know, if I'm just in the neighborhood, I might be taking my kid to the doctor's office, but I'm in the neighborhood. And so I'm running up just to get this order that a judge signed so I can get it to my client and get this property returned.
Yeah.
Those things happen all the time. I was not seeing a judge. The judge was not on the bench. So I was not disrupting any proceedings. by doing what I did. And that's the part I want to be clear. But at the same time, as a black man, Howard Law did say never go to a courthouse for any reason without a suit. And now I'm like, oh, this is why.
This is why. I have nothing to add. I just want to thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your story with us. And I am rooting for you and your appeal. And I pray that you come out successful on that, because it's all absolutely ridiculous. And I hope the law works in your favor. I can't say that you receive justice, because that's not real. I think you did absolutely nothing wrong, and the video proved it. You know, to make this story bigger and be on social, that seems to help people. They want to cancel people. Let's cancel the court that put you in this situation when it was unwarranted. And so black men, black women, just protect yourself, whether it's music, posting on social media, or going to court.
Definitely. And definitely the intellectual property side. I think that's where we've lost the most by not adequately protecting ourselves just over the years, you know. And that's why I do mess with the Ray Charles and the James Browns of the world and the Michael Jacksons. They they took control of their stuff.
Property on point. And so make sure y'all do that, because ownership is invaluable. And you have to own your intellectual property. So we're talking about trademarks, copyrights, and it's like if you're creating some secret recipe, any patents, stop giving y'all stuff away for free. Make people pay y'all, because nothing lives without black people.
And I tell you, and what one example of that is, you know, when Kanye was on Sway show talking about how people calling him crazy, he understood the importance of maintaining ownership.
Yes.
And now Yeezy brand is worth multi-billions.
Yes.
Now, if he does the employee thing, we see that. I mean, Jordan still makes a lot of money from Jordan. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But at the end of the day, if Jordan was to do, if Nike, a company like Nike, came to a LeBron would have said, no, I need equity. What if Jordan just got 5% equity of Nike? Mm-hmm. Nike worth $40 billion. Mm-hmm. You know, 5% equity is $2 billion. Jordan barely worth $2 billion. And most of that is not from Nike.
Yeah.
So he would have been at 4. And that's what Kanye is showing people, like, now that he maintained that ownership, I'm worth more than Jordan. Absolutely. And I've been in the sneaker game 10 years. He's been in the sneaker game 30 years.
Exactly. And that's why now in my agreements, I try to tell my clients, you need to move away from being a service provider and become a partner.
Yeah.
And with that example, Kanye did it. So let's work on us being the Kanye and what we do. And I think we're doing it. And I would love for everyone to find a way to keep in touch with you. So can you share your socials or email, how people get
connected? Yeah, social, Instagram, Lincoln Lawyer LA. Email Jaye at personlinlaw.com. On Clubhouse, find me under Jai Person Lin at JaiPL. And, you know, I like Clubhouse, so tap in with us there. And definitely the We Not For Sale podcast, WeKnotForCell. It's 7 of us, and it's WeKnotForCell. So that has various meetings. But the KNOT is because we are tight like a knot, and the CELL is because, you know, we are bringing life to our people, but we're also not for your jail cell, your prison cell, or any of those other cells. So that's what it's about. So tap in with me, and, you know, also just find me in the streets of LA. I'm there.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I look forward to continuing the conversation. Thank you for shedding light on the criminal justice system and the intersection with that and entertainment. So thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you learned a lot about the intersection of entertainment and criminal law. Make sure that, you know, you take those tidbits that Jaya gave you on how to protect yourself out here in the streets and also on social media, in addition to your intellectual property. For more information on this episode, check out www.poplawpodcast.com and check us out on Pop Law Podcast on Instagram. And the episode is available everywhere. Again, I'm your host, Desiree. We had Jaya on here for the interview series. And please remember, we are not your attorneys.
When something happens to your kitchen, you might say,
"This is ludicrous."
But that won't fix your home. That will only get you the rapper, Ludicrous.
Having trouble? Don't panic. Don't be alarmed. You need to file a claim? Holla at State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. You can file a claim on the app or call us.
Thanks, Mr. Chris.
No matter how ludicrous the situation, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.